Luke 24, 1 through 12 says, "On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, 'Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee? The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again.' Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary mother of James, and all the others who were with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb, and bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away wondering to himself what had happened."
They didn't really have a plan. I mean, they had a plan, but it didn't really make sense. They were taking spices that they had prepared to put on the corpse, so they'd spent money and time, and they were heading out to honor him. They really must have loved him a lot. He's dead, and they're still arranging their life around him. But his tomb is off limits. There are soldiers keeping people away, and the rock lid on top of it is too heavy for them to lift. So these ladies' plan is to do what? But they go because they want to do something. And when they arrive, it's weird. There are no soldiers there, and the stone blocking the entrance is over there. And when they look inside the tomb, nobody is there. I mean, nobody. And they went in and they looked around in the cave for it, but nope, Jesus was not in there. Some people have suggested that Jesus was really still dead, but the ladies got the wrong address. They went to the wrong tomb. They got a little confused. They'd been crying. They were ladies. GPS signal wasn't really strong outside of Jerusalem. And they were standing at the wrong grave. That's not what happened, because even though Jesus wasn't there, two angelic beings showed up with clothes that hurt their eyes like flashes of lightning in the dark. And they not only confirmed that it was the right tomb, but they explained to the ladies why it was empty. The angelic being said, "He isn't here. He has risen like he said he would. It is the right tomb." A couple weeks ago, I came over early Sunday morning and I prepped the building for the assembly that morning, and I joined the morning prayer group and I greeted people in the lobby and I led the assembly and I preached and I met those of you on the sidewalk that wanted to talk to me, and I sat in a Bible study and I helped out with some Willowbrook kids meeting. And then when everybody had left the building, I prepped the building again because there was a funeral here that afternoon. And then I went in my office and I worked on what I was going to say for the funeral. So by 2:15 on that Sunday afternoon, I was pretty tired. But I knew no one was going to show up until 3:30, and I thought, wow, maybe I could take a little nap. But then I remembered my nephew's team had a hockey game at 2:25 that day, and he'd invited me. And it's over on Linden Road, and I thought I could probably make that, so I went. Gillis, Lollipop Farm, quick right on 31, quick left on Allridge, go down and around, go over right. It's right over the canal. I pull in, and there are lots of cars at this place. But I drive around. I don't see the Campbell's vehicle anywhere. And it's past starting time. So I park, and I'm about to go in, but first I thought I should check my phone for their message. Maybe I got the time wrong. And I looked at the side of the building as I was checking my phone, and it said Rochester Ice Center. And I had a bad feeling. So I checked the text, which said, "We're playing at Tim Hortons Iceplex at 2:25. And no angel appeared saying, "Why do you look for the skaters in Fairport? Don't you know that they're in Henrietta?" But I knew that I had driven to the wrong tomb. Turns out the ladies were at the right place. It was Jesus who was at the wrong place. So they went back. Mary, Joanna, the other ladies, they went back and they told the guys. They said, "Whoa, he's not there. The tomb was open. The rock was over there. We went in. There were no guards. There was no body. We had spices. There were clothes there. There were angels there. They had clothes. Whoa, they had bright clothes. So bright. We shouldn't have looked at them without those special glasses. There are two of them there. We bowed down." And they said, "He's not here." And we said, "Right, we see he's not here. Where'd you take him?" And they said, "Nowhere. He walked out. He's alive. Like he told you he would be. We came back to tell you, but we forgot the spices. They're probably still in there. But he's not in there. He's not there." They said, "Jesus is alive again. Can you believe that?" And the disciples looked at the ladies who were crying and laughing and shouting and babbling. And the disciples said, and I quote, "No, we cannot believe that. That's unbelievable, literally not believable." But after thinking about it for a minute and realizing who they were talking about, Peter raced out of the room and ran all the way to the tomb. And sure enough, when he got there, it was empty, and the grave clothes were there, and some of them were folded up. And Peter thought, wow, that's weird. If you're going to steal a corpse, why would you unwrap it first? And why would you pile up the wrappings neatly? And he walked away from the empty tomb, wondering what was going on. Do you play Wordle? Wordle is a game where there's a new five-letter word every day, and you type in a guess, and they tell you how many letters of the five that you got right, and they give you, if you guess the correct letter in the wrong place, they'll tell you that too. So on my phone, if you type in the right letter in the right place, it's green. It turns green. If you type in a right letter in the wrong place, it turns yellow. And if you type in a wrong letter, it turns gray. And you get six chances each day to guess the word, and it's fun to play. Our family plays and compares and brags. Yeah. At first, our kids played, and then they showed us how, and then we started, and Carice explained it to us. She said, "Dad, it's never a plural. Don't even bother with the S at the end. It's never a plural world, and they're always regular words. They're so regular. They're just normal words." So I'm playing, and I'm guessing. Normal words every day. Everything's fine until one day, I only have a couple guesses left, and here are the letters that I have. UNEI. And I've already ruled out the R and the T, so I know it's not unite, I know it's not untie, I know it's not urine, although it wouldn't be urine because they don't use words like that. I know it's not inure, which I don't even know what it means, but I know it's a word. Inure is not an easy word. I knew it wasn't that because Chris said they're always just regular words. So like Peter, I'm down to my last guess, and I walk away wondering what's going on because the clues on my phone just were not adding up. Perhaps like Peter, the resurrection hasn't added up for you yet. You've heard the claims. You know what every church everywhere is preaching about today. But based on what you've experienced in life, it doesn't seem like God's way always wins. Maybe there's a piece of missing or something you need to hear or see that will solve the puzzle, but you don't have it yet. Paul Azinger had won 10 professional golf tournaments in his life, including a PGA championship, when it was discovered that he had cancer. And he wrote about that. He said, "I'm in the x-ray room lying on an ice-cold table, shivering from nervousness. It was an awful feeling. As the technician adjusted the machine, a genuine fear came upon me. I could die from cancer. But then another recognition hit me even harder. I'm going to die eventually anyway. Cancer, something else, I'm definitely going to die. It's just a question of when." And as I lay there, I remember something that my friend Larry Moody once said to me. He said, "Zinger, we're not in the land of the living going to the land of the dying. We're in the land of the dying, and we're headed towards the land of the living." And he said that clicked. At that moment, it clicked. He said, "I have made a lot of money since I've been on the tour. I have won a lot of tournaments, but that happiness is always temporary. The only true contentment is in a personal relationship with Jesus." He says, "I'm not saying that nothing ever bothers me, that I don't have problems, but I feel like I have found the answer to the 6-foot hole. I will spend eternity with God, and I have a promise that as a child of God, he will help me deal with anything. He promises to give me contentment no matter what life brings, even cancer." So maybe like Paul Azinger, you just need another piece of evidence to help figure out this whole resurrection life puzzle. Listen to this, another piece.
"Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying?' 'They have taken my Lord away,' she said, 'and I don't know where they have put him.' At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?' Thinking he was the gardener, she said, 'Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him.' Jesus said to her, 'Mary.' She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, 'Rabboni,'
Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her.
Now we're back to the Sunday morning after the crucifixion. Mary's at the tomb. She is so confused. Nothing's good. Jesus was dead. His body's been taken somewhere. Her friends went running off. The whole world is crazy for Mary, and she knows crazy because she's had demons living in her. So she stands there and she cries. And then she looks in the tomb again, and there are two angels sitting in there. They're sitting where Jesus had been buried. And the angels ask why she's crying. And here's how bizarre everything is. She answers them. She has a conversation with them. Like, sure, when you find two extraterrestrials sitting in front of you, of course you're going to talk to them. "Yes, I'm crying. Somebody stole the dead body of a guy that I love, and I don't know where they went with it." And that's that. She just ends that conversation and turns away. And she starts another one. Another guy, as she turns, says, "Why are you crying?" I mean, it's not unusual to find people crying in a cemetery, right? But he says, "Who are you looking for?" And she thinks that he works there. Mary thinks Jesus is the gardener. We don't always recognize people. Sometimes you just... I had to speak this Friday evening at the Good Friday thing. I mean, I got to speak at the Good Friday thing this past Friday. I thank you who attended. Friendly faces at such things always help me. Speaking to large groups of people that I don't know scares me to death, really. Speaking each week here is hard, but I call my Good Friday assignments each year 8 minutes of terrifying. I always want to start my speech over there with these words. I want to say, "Hello, my name is John Walker, and not only is it a great honor to be here tonight, it's really inconvenient." But I don't do that. I'm so nervous when I go there. When I first started preaching, my brother suggested that I buy a lot of yellow pants. I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, when you pee yourself, nobody will know." I said, brothers are so helpful and insightful. Because as I drove down 251 on Friday night, I realized I really needed to go. So I parked the car and I ran in the building towards the bathroom, and I passed someone in the lobby I didn't know, and she said, "Hi, John." Which would have made most people stop, but it made me more nervous, so I just kept right on going. Afterwards, I found her. She was a lady who had been part of our church 40 years ago. We had a very nice conversation. Mary did not recognize Jesus. I don't know. Maybe she was crying. Maybe the sun was in her eyes. Maybe she had to go to the bathroom. Maybe you don't expect to talk to dead people days after you bury them. She's distraught, and he's supposed to be dead. Give her a break. So she says, "If you'll just tell me where you put him, I'll take care of it. Did you put him somewhere?" And as she waits for an answer from the gardener, what is he thinking? What is Jesus thinking? Something tender, no doubt. And he said, "Mary." And in one of the greatest moments in the history of greatest moments, can you imagine her look of recognition when she realizes it's him? When she hears Jesus call her by name again. If ever there was a time when it would have been appropriate to say, OMG, that was it. See, up to that point, the scoreboard had read death, 6 zillion. Beating death, 0. Sure, Jesus had raised the widow's son, Jairus' daughter, Lazarus, he'd raised them back to life, but they were all going to die again eventually. Those were just extensions, not victories. But Jesus said he was going to beat death once and for all, and then he was going to live forever after that. And sure enough, there he stood outside the tomb calling Mary by her name, which is when she screamed in joy and ran over and fell at his feet and hugged him. And apparently she wouldn't let him go, because the next thing Jesus says is, Mary, let go. I'm glad you're glad, but we've got things to do. We've got people to tell. We're not done yet. Let go. Jesus told her to go get his guys, tell him that he's back and raring to go, and she did. She went and said, "I have seen the Lord." Have you ever had something so good that you just couldn't stop telling people about it? And not like if you get the Wendy's app, you can get a single, which usually costs $6.79 for just a dollar, not something like that. Although that's quite a good sandwich for a buck. But not like, I mean, when you have something really good, not like when my daughter was going to buy a vacuum and I heard Marissa talking about Shark vacuum cleaners. So after talking with Marissa, Carice bought a Shark vacuum cleaner and she texted us later the same day she bought it and she said, and I quote, "Oh my goodness, this vacuum cleaner is amazing. I'm going crazy," end quote. I texted back, "Carice, do you know that when you clean a vacuum cleaner, you become a vacuum cleaner?" She totally ignored my attempt at humor. She texted back, "I vacuumed half my living room, and I sat on the line in between. On the right, a handful of fur. On the left, no fur, not a single hair, even when I tried," cap letters. Next text, "This is so funny. I want to write a review. Where can you do that?" Last text, "Okay, done for tonight. 4 hours of pure pleasure and joy vacuuming." So dads, if you're looking for a good Easter gift for your daughters, buy her a Shark. And if you don't believe me, talk to Carice or Marissa, but expect to be there for a while. But more than something to clean your floors, how about someone who could sweep away your guilt? More than something that would fill your stomach, how about someone who could nourish your soul? Did you ever have something so good that you wanted to tell everybody about it? Do you hear about the man who hated his wife's cat, Mr. Peepers? So one day he drove Mr. Peepers to the park and left it there. When he drove home, the cat was walking up their driveway. So the next day, the man drove Mr. Peepers to another neighborhood and booted the cat out of the moving car. When he got home, he found Mr. Peepers asleep in his chair. So the next day, the man drove 20 miles away, turned right, turned left, went up a mountain, went down into a valley, went past a river, went into a forest, and dumped the hated cat in a deep hole. Hours later, he called home, and his wife answered, and he said, "Is Mr. Peepers there?" And she said, "Yes, why?" The man said, "I'm really lost, and I need directions home." What if you knew someone who could always guide you safely home, no matter where you've gotten to, no matter how far you've gone? What would you give for someone who could help you come back safely every time? We all look pretty good here. It's Easter, after all, but if you knew some of our stories, if you could see into some of our paths, and some from not too far back, you might be surprised at how deep our not really good goes in this room. There was a con man making the rounds in Liverpool, England, and he was really good at what he did. He would frequent pubs on the Southford docks, and he would mooch drinks by playing on people's sympathy. He would sit down next to someone at a bar, and he would tell a fictitious but heart-rending tale of woe, how much he had suffered in life, sickness, deprivation, depression. His life was so hard, and everybody wanted to help. He was so good at it, his story was so sad, they would always buy him a drink. One compassionate chap in a bar even offered to take the guy home with him one night. And that night, with a pillow over his face, the man put the guy out of his imaginary misery. Now, the moral of that story is, I don't know. What would you say the moral of that story is? Don't go into bars, it's dangerous. Don't offer drinks to sad people, they're probably lying. Never go home with a guy at an English pub. Don't do what you do too well, it could kill you. Don't use a pillow when you sleep, it could kill you. You can pick a moral of the story that you like, but what I'm trying to say is we're not none of us living life like we really ought to be. We have all slid a long way off from good, and we're all sliding towards dying. But there is a guy who can change all of that, and today we heartily recommend him to you. One more scripture.
Mark 16, 1 through 8. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, mother of James and Salome, bought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
That is a strange way to end an exciting gospel, would you not say? The people who have the evidence of Jesus' resurrection are told, "Go tell people," but they say nothing to anyone because they're afraid. The end. It's kind of weird. The ladies head to a tomb. They're worried about moving the stone, but not to worry. It's gone. The tomb is open. Did you hear about the kangaroo that kept escaping its enclosure at the zoo? There was an 8-foot fence, but the kangaroo kept getting out. And knowing that kangaroos can leap, the zookeeper put up a 16-foot fence, but the kangaroo kept getting out. So he put up a 30-foot fence, but the next morning the kangaroo was still out hopping around the zoo. When they put up a 60-foot fence, the camel in the next enclosure asked, "How high you think they're going to go?" The kangaroo said, "Well, probably 1,000 feet until somebody figures out that they should lock my door at night." The tomb was open. Lots of times we worry about things that are the wrong things in life. There's no problem with the grave. God opened that all up so anybody could go in. The ladies get there. They walk right on in. They're greeted by Vanna White of Angels. He said, "See the place where they laid him," with the appropriate hand gestures. But he has a mission for them should they choose to accept it, which they do not. Is that possible? Can people who have the answer choose not to share it? I mean, it doesn't seem right. But that's how Mark closes his book, the end of his book. Now, obviously, in the end, they did tell people. They told people that Jesus was alive. They must have, because we know that today, that he was alive. So maybe Mark was just making a point that it's our choice if we want to tell or not. It's your life. You can, once you know that Jesus is really alive again, you can say something or not. But really, how could you not? If he's here and available and good and helpful, and if we have friends who are hurting and struggling and trying to figure out life, and we know that Jesus could help them like he helps us, how could we not let them know? The word was ennui. The word word. The one that I had U-N-E-I for. Ennui, E-N-N-U-I. And I said, "Carice, you said these were regular, normal American words. What's up with ennui?" And she said, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's too weird. And in case you're wondering, because I was, ennui is a feeling of dissatisfaction arising from a lack of excitement or purpose in life, which is pretty descriptive of a lot of people, you know, who are not being trained by Jesus in how to do life. And it's kind of descriptive of a bunch of Christians, you know, who haven't yet figured out a way to help other people know. That makes for ennui. But if you have something that's life-changing and you're helping other people change, that's life like God made you to live it. And when you're in that zone, when you're helping other people become whole again. I heard a guy say, the reason most people aren't Christians is because they've never met one. They've met people who go to church assemblies. They've met people who were sprinkled as infants and called Christians. But they don't know a single person who lives his or her life with Jesus really at the center. So how could they choose to become something they've never even seen before? Most people who choose to follow Jesus do so because they've seen somebody who is following Jesus. Very few people choose to become Christians because of what they see of Christianity on television. It's people you actually know who follow Jesus that lead you towards Jesus. And the only way we can help people see Jesus being followed by us is if we're doing life with them. The way to avoid ennui is to deliberately take opportunities in your life to help other people see Jesus. Vince Antonucci tells about a friend of his name is Dominic Volume. He's 54 years old. He is a Christian who got cancer. He got cancer and found out that he was going to die. So Dominic moved to a poor neighborhood and deliberately took a job as a night watchman in a factory so that he could leave work every morning at 8 o'clock, grab some food, and go sit on a park bench where he would hang out with drifters and homeless people and lonely old men. And he would laugh with those people, and he would tell stories, and he would share his food every morning. He would just be there with them. And after a while, that motley crew asked Dom, "Who are you anyway? We don't even really know your story. You're here every day, that's cool, but who are you?" So he gave them a brief description of his life, and then he told them, "See, God loves us. He really loves us, and he'll never give up on us, ever." And Dom told them, "Jesus came to earth for people like you." One morning, Dom didn't show up at the park bench. And the guys got concerned, so they went and they found that he was dead on his apartment floor. And they wanted to throw a funeral, so they buried Dominic Volume in a very cheap pine box. And over 7,000 people showed up. They showed up for Dom because he had shown up for them. Helping people know Jesus isn't about getting them to come into this building. It's about being where they are. If they join us here for something, that's great. But if there's 100 of us and only one of them, what are the chances they're going to ask any real questions? Who would do that? Do you hear about the son whose mom yelled, "Get up, it's time to go to the church service"? And the son said, "I am not going today for two reasons. Nobody there likes me, and it's boring." And the mom yelled back, "I'll give you two reasons why you are going to church service today. Because you're 53 years old, and you're the preacher." It's not about getting people where things seem pretty. It's about hanging out with people where they are, on their turf, in their yard, at their office, on their court. And when you've been there with them, living a life that is interesting and helpful and non-ennui-ish, if you've been with them and if they know that you're on their side, then they might want to ask a question about what you know and why you do life like you do. And then you can tell them about the guy who's teaching you how to do life better. The guy who can show you how to get back to good. The guy who could show them how to do life so that even if they die, they won't.